Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Our next guest is Jeff Zients. He's got a wonderful title. He's Manager of Customer Happiness for Sunglass Warehouses. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here to talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of service and the way we see it.
Well, tell us what Sunglass Warehouse does, the website, and a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So we are sunglasswarehouse.com is an online-based sunglass company. We sell all sorts of affordably priced products for our customers, from polarized lenses to just regular sunglasses, anything to protect your eyes. And we've been around and in business for quite a while now. And I've been with the company now for a little over a year and a half, leading the team. Like you said, I'm the customer happiness manager here. We consider our team customer happiness rather than customer service, because we feel like it's much bigger than just servicing a customer. We want our customers to leave feeling like they've been taken care of and made happy. And so it's a really great place to work, and I've loved helping shape that vision that our owners have.
And the website?
Yeah, it's sunglasswarehouse.com.
But Jeff, I'm going to ask you one question and turn it over.
Fire away.
I've never seen anybody buy a pair of sunglasses without trying them on. How do you keep them happy?
Well, that is one big hurdle that we've had to face. So what we do is we make sure that we have what we call a happiness guarantee. And so when customers purchase from us, they are given the opportunity to make sure that they get the product that they're wanting. We go to extensive lengths to make sure that you can actually see the sizing from measurements on the site to give you a good idea, so that way if you have a pair of glasses at home that you like, you can always measure those and double check. But if you get them home and you don't like them, you just give our team a call or shoot us an email, and we'll make it right. We'll do everything we can to walk you through. Maybe you'll call and say, oh, this size might not have been perfect for me. You'll tell us what you liked or didn't like, and we'll help try to match you up. We've got an amazing team of people that are dedicated to making sure that every customer, though it is always a little bit problematic to purchase something like glasses online, but with our company, you don't ever have to worry about being left on the hook for something. If you don't like it, you just get a hold of us, and we make it happen.
I'll turn it over to you, Dan.
Well, I'm thinking about technology.
Yeah, Dan.
And I'm thinking about, is it possible to put a mirror image on a computer screen?
Yes, for the most part. If you have a webcam, it's pretty easy to do.
Are you familiar with the technology that's available on Instagram, where you can put on images on top of your Instagram images?
Yes, it is a very it's something that we've. So one thing that makes us unique, Dan, we've actually got a tech team in house. So all of our web development, all of our product development is internal. And one of the things that I know our team has been researching is this new technology. I think Instagram, Snapchat, where you can actually, if you look at the camera, it will actually superimpose something on you, so you can virtually try things on. That's something that we are definitely working on, because I think it's something that as we continue to evolve as a online glasses company, we're going to be able to help our customers and service them in that way by offering things like that, hopefully in the future.
My son and daughter-in-law and granddaughter were in Mexico last week, and he sent me an Instagram of my 3.5-year-old granddaughter. She had on a pair of glasses, long eyebrows, and some makeup. And I figured that it was something that they did while they were in Mexico. And come to find out that it was all put on, superimposed, I think with Snapchat. Yeah. And the glasses absolutely fit her perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I would think that that would be a great way to deal with that one problem. How am I going to look in these glasses for your company?
Absolutely.
So I'm assuming that you allow the buyer, if they don't like what they've got, you said they call the firm, call the customer service people, and they can return them and get something else.
Yep. All they need to do is if they don't like something, they just give us a call and they just get them back to us, and we will either they'll either select a style or they'll work with whoever they're speaking with. To really talk about what concerns they have, what issues that we can address, that we can try to make sure that we find that pair that fits them perfectly. You know, we run the people that come and visit our site typically range from somebody who's just looking for a basic style, not looking for anything fancy, all the way up to some really fashion-forward customers that are looking for a specific style or a specific look that they may have seen that's getting popular. You know, one thing that we're seeing very popular right now are flat-framed or flat lenses on sunglasses. That's a really popular movement in the sunglass space. And so there may be a customer that needs that particular look. And so our team is really versed in being able to help customers find the style they're and also have that fit that they're looking for.
So do people come to your website first to shop, or do they come and impulse buy and then go back and fix up their mistake later?
Most of the time, our return rate is 4%, which is fairly low for being an e-commerce company. Most of the time, our customers get it right off the bat. But when they don't, our team's here to make sure that they end up, at the end of the day, getting what they're looking for.
Let me broaden the subject a little bit.
Fire away.
And talking about your e-commerce model. I read a report recently that said that there will by the end of this year, there will be 8,500 retail spaces closed in big box malls by the end of the year. And so I'm thinking about Sunglass Hut and other sunglass local in the mall suppliers.
Yep.
You are potentially putting them out of business.
Potentially.
Why wouldn't you?
We are looking to capitalize on the way the world is going. We see the majority of people looking to purchase through an online method. They don't need to always walk into a store. And so we're looking to make sure that we give the best experience for our customer possible. We're not out for blood. We're not looking to close down other e-tailers or retailers. We're here. It's a big market. We're here to make a difference and endear ourselves to customers. That's what we're trying to do. And that's one thing I think e-commerce has gotten, at least over the beginning, there's been a lot of it's kind of a cold transaction, if that makes sense. There's not a lot of personality or connection that happens, and that's where a team like ours is really trying to go a different route. We're trying to be an e-tail environment, an e-commerce environment that somebody can say, you know what, though? I like those guys because they don't treat me like I'm just an order number. They don't treat me like I'm – they actually connect with me. They actually care about whether or not my glasses work for me. They care about overall the experience. And so that's something that we've worked really hard on to try to offer the customer that wants to buy online but still wants a personal touch on the other end.
Dan, let me interrupt. But, Jeff, exactly how do you do that?
Now, sure.
Okay, because I've heard that before from other companies, mm-hmm. and it's still the same. What do you do that's different?
So the first thing is it starts with the people that we hire. We've got core values internally as a company that we are not willing to compromise. Some of our core values are people matter most and create customer happiness. These are things that are non-negotiable for anybody that works for the company, but especially people that work for our customer happiness team. And so the one thing that I think makes us stand out is that there's no scripting, there's no requirements, there's no checkpoints that any of our teammates have to have in order to do what they feel like is right in the moment. They don't. If they feel like a customer needs something overnighted and it's going to cost the company $100 or more dollars, if that teammate feels like that's the right decision and that's the thing that needs to be made for the customer, they do it. They don't have to check with our team leads or check with the manager. Our team needs to be empowered to always make the decision to put the customer first, because the customer at the end of the day is the only thing that matters. So that's where it starts. And then we branch out from that by doing things that we feel like give more human touch point. So we do, each teammate does thank you cards every quarter. We actually keep track of them. And when they have connections with people, they handwrite thank you cards to send to customers to remind them that there are people behind the website that they're experiencing things on. We also do, throughout the year, there's been a couple different really exciting things that we've done that have really spoken to our customers. And we do them without looking for sales. One thing that we're getting ready to start up again this year was a program we did last year. We basically did a Secret Santa program where we identified customers that we either connected with or that we wanted to go over and above for, and we would just send them either a product or an accessory or something along those lines just to make them feel special. And there was no other sales tactic to it. There was no other motive behind it. It was just, let's go out and make somebody's day and live up to the billing of being the customer happiness team. So those are things that we push beyond just being here to answer the phone or respond to emails. And it's made, at least in my viewpoint, I've been able to see and speak with customers who have been impacted so greatly from just little things like that that may not mean a lot to us who deal with everything like this every day, but at the end of the day, it just makes their day. And those are points that really help us in the long run.
Back to you, Dan. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Not a problem. What it's all about, sharing ideas and thoughts. So let me go back and make an observation and see if you mm-hmm. agree or disagree.
Yes.
It seems to me that what you and a bunch of other people that we've talked to in the internet space mm-hmm. have realized that you can't really compete with the experience of walking into a big box store. But you don't want to, because the experience today going into a big box store is atrocious. Mm-hmm. And that I hear everybody that we interview on this program mm-hmm. that's in the internet space, that customer service is what drives their business.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
Absolutely. I agree with that. And, you know, Dan, I think there are stores out there. I think there are even individual people that you'll run into no matter what that are so dedicated to service that even in places that are known not to have the greatest service as a overall reputation, that you can have fantastic experiences in any one of those stores on any given day. But the advantage that we've got as a team is that being an e-commerce company, I can control who the customer is going to experience every time they contact us. And it gives us the ability to really hone in on making sure that that experience is not only adequate, but we're pushing for being an elite customer service team. That's what we talk about in our weekly meetings, and when we're talking about how do we become better, is we want to go from great to elite, and we want to be a company that people go, I want to have service like SunglassWarehouse.com does. And I think that's what we all try to capitalize on.
Right. How are we doing on time, Don?
Well, I was just going to interrupt you, Dan, and say we have to stop a moment to hear from one of our sponsors. But we'll be right back with Jeff Sense of Sunglass Warehouse.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're back here with Jeff Sense. He's customer service, not manager. I'm going to look it up right now again because I love this title. He's a customer happiness manager at Sunglass Warehouse, and he's charged with making buyers happy before, during, and after they purchase. So, Dan, back to you with your questions.
Thank you. So what I'm interested in is how long have you been in business?
Mm-hmm. We've been in business for, let's see here, I'm doing math in my head, I apologize, 12 years now.
And if I looked at the chart of your growth pattern, what would it look like?
It would be Sunglass Warehouse, it would be up. We have, in the last year or so, we've hit a little bit of a just a normaling off period. But we've actually done some branding changes that we think is we've changed focus demographically, so that is why we have kind of leveled off, and we expect it to then pick back up next year.
So are sunglasses commodities, or are they fashion?
Both. You know, there's a time that it's a commodity, and there's a time that it's fashion. We try to make sure that we hit across both sides of that. There are times that you just need a pair of sunglasses and you don't really care what they look like, or you've got a specific style, maybe an aviator style. That's the big popular one that everybody knows. And you just know that you're always going to want an aviator and you don't really care other than that what it looks like. And so you're going to go out and get it. And we try to make sure we've got a price point that is not only affordable, but you get a good quality brand in there. And then for the people that are fashion focused, we've got, like we were speaking earlier, we've got a whole slew of new arrivals that we keep up with, that we're always looking for the newest hot trend in the market to make sure that people can come to sunglasswarehouse.com and get all of it.
Do you manufacture any of the glasses yourself?
We do not manufacture them in-house, no.
But do you have contract manufacturers that you work with?
Yeah, we work with vendors. We have separate vendors, and then we do have a selection of our product that is direct sourced. That's correct.
So you have your own house brand, in other words.
We don't brand them the house. We don't have a house brand name. Like, we don't have Sunglass Warehouse actually on them, but we do have some that come from directly from the manufacturer.
Dan, can I ask a question, which is, I thought that something like 60% of the world's eyeglasses, et cetera, are from one manufacturer, an Italian company. Is my number wrong? Or
It's up there, Don. It's I believe it's Luxottica is the Luxottica and I forget the other one now off the top of my head. Anytime you put me on the spot, I forget it. But yes, there are a huge amount of eyeglasses in the world are made from one individual manufacturer. There's like two that are very popular. They have they'll make Ray-Ban and some of those other brands, I believe.
Yes.
But we deal with we're actually not purchasing from those vendors. And forgive me, but I don't have
right.
that information on who we actually purchase from. But
well, let me one more question, Dan, which
sure.
is you mentioned that you had changed direction and demographic. What have you changed to?
So we used to have a little bit of focus towards the young millennial straight out of college area, and we've actually expanded to be a little bit more young to mid professional. So we're trying to still appeal to the young, fresh out of school type of demographic, but we're also trying to have the kind of product and messaging and branding that speaks to a wider demographic as a whole. And it's so far, it's been a very successful thing for our company.
Back to you, Dan. That was my two questions.
When you look at segmentation,
mm-hmm.
Do you have a niche that you operate in, or do you try and span the whole market?
We still probably have a niche that we sit in, and I would say the niche that we're really – it's probably the affordable side. You know, you get into some of the brand-name sunglass sides, and you're talking easily $100 pair of sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
Our sunglasses are anywhere between $10 to $20 on the regular basis, and so that's – probably the biggest niche that we try to fill, and then to offer those very fashionable options at an affordable price point is something that makes us a little bit unique.
Do you supply your product to other vendors?
We have a wholesale program. It is something that we have done. It just started in 2017, so it's a fairly new process for us, and we're still working our way through what all that looks like and how to work with other vendors that are selling our product as well.
What was the rationale for considering that?
Well, since we've been in existence, we've always had a section of customer base that would always come to us and search us looking for vendors. And though we sold some to those customers, we never really dove into the market of selling wholesale. It was something that I don't know why we didn't push for it earlier, but late 2016, we started getting a lot of traction around it. A lot of people were reaching out to us asking, and we had the ability to put something in place for them, and so they're able to come sign up with our company. Once they are approved and become a wholesale vendor, they have a whole separate side of our website that gives them specific pricing and talks about the minimums and requirements to continue to be part of the wholesale environment. And it's been a really interesting learning process for us, but it's also opened up some doors for us as a company as a whole.
So where do you think your company's headed?
I personally think that we're headed up. We've been in a great place. We've been in a great position as a company. And I think with the focus that we've got on our core values and what we're pushing as far as making sure our customers are taken care of and putting them as the central focus of everybody in the building, from the tech team to our merchandising team, to our marketing team, everybody's focus is on the customer experience, and making sure that all of that is seamless. And I think it's made a big difference in how our customer perceives the experience that they're getting. And also, it just, you know, at the end of the day, as a customer, you want to be felt like you want to end up feeling like you want to feel like you matter personally, not just as, oh yeah, I'm a customer, so that's why they care. We've got customers that'll call us on a regular basis and just talk to, and they specifically ask for a teammate by name because they want to talk and they develop relationships. And, you know, I think that's a pretty special thing to be a part of.
Mm. Sorry,
Dan, we have time for one more question, though I could think we could go on for an hour with Jeff.
So am I curious, is what's the breaking trend? What's the hot? Is that the flat lenses?
Oh yeah,
flat aviators?
Flat lens sunglasses and with really mirrored like lens fronts. That is the hot trend right now.
I was up ahead of that because I bought those last summer.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not. I'll tell you what, Dan. I'm not cool enough to pull them off. I've tried. I don't think I look cool. So you have to look cooler in them than I do. But that is the big trend right now. Is the big mirrored lens flat sunglasses? That's what everybody is all over this year.
Terrific.
Yeah, I guess I'm not cool or anything, but I'm still stuck with my old kind. But we've been talking with Jeff Sense. I have to get this again to make sure I get this right because I love it. He's the customer happiness manager at Sunglass Warehouse. Thank you so much, Jeff, for being with us today.
Thanks, Don. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, Dan, our next guest, Jack Sheck, is founder of my college planning team. And I'm for one, I'm looking forward to him because he's been helping parents figure out how to help their children save for college and pay for college. Jack, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Glad to be on.
You're founder of My College Planning, and can tell us a little bit about what that is, about yourself, and how people can reach you.
All right. Well, I'm really in the business. My background is business and marketing and financial services for about 40 years. And I've been in the college planning space now for about 6 years. And I've assembled a team of several CPAs, CFPs, and other credentialed financial advisors that work with us to help families reduce college costs. We're all about just beating up the cost of college wherever we can, through any legal and appropriate strategies that, you know, that are suited to that family.
Okay. And the name of your company?
MyCollegePlanningTeam.com.
Okay. Dan, I'm going to let you ask the first question because this is more in your bailiwick.
Having put four boys through private colleges,
and
I'm proud. Huh?
You're a poor man then.
Yes, you got that right. Four boys in private colleges and in each of them in 4 years. So none of this 6 years to get it done.
They all got out in 4 years?
Pardon me?
They Did they all graduate in 4 years?
Yes, sir.
That's I commend you on that, because the average time now to get a four-year degree is 5.9 years. That's something, Dan, we highlight in our workshops, because it's one of the best ways to save money on college is to get your kids out in 4 years, and you did it, so congratulations.
Yeah, I basically told my sons we were going to provide for them a good liberal arts education.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to go to the colleges of their choices,
mm-hmm.
we had to be able to afford it. They had to have some investment in it, so they had to take out Stafford loans, which wasn't a lot of money.
Wonderful.
They had to complete in 4 years, because yep. after 4 years, Pop's not paying anymore.
Well, I guess I have to put you on my college planning team just to give that advice. You're a living example of how it should be done, Don, and I'm serious. The student has to have skin in the game.
Yes.
And I don't know if your kids worked on campus to help out also, but
yep.
if they do, they get better grades and actually improve the likelihood of getting out in 4 years.
I had a situation with all of my boys that they worked during the summer, and they worked doing something
right.
during the year.
Excellent.
They made an investment in their own education. But even that, educating four boys, I spent about $650,000 after taxes to educate four boys.
Oh, my God. Woo. You know, what can I say? I don't know if you used every strategy you should have to beat down that cost, but, again, congratulations on getting them out in 4 years.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that I'm a writer, and I have been writing current events commentary for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
and I also am a published author in mysteries and thrillers. But I used to, many, many, many years ago, decades ago, I used to write for Entrepreneur Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it for almost 4 years. I wrote the Money Wise column for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the singular column that I wrote that got the most response was about funding college.
Interesting. Yeah. That's why we do about 80 workshops a year all over Chicago. There's a lot of demand for this information.
So why do you think I'm not familiar with the Chicago public schools, only what I see on television.
Mm-hmm.
But don't we have a situation where in many high schools, public high schools, they provide college counseling or not?
That they provide what, Don?
College counseling.
Oh, yeah. Here's the truth about that. And this is true throughout public schools around the country, not just Chicago. The average, the ratio, according to the Student Counseling Association, should be one counselor per 250 students. The actual ratio in the Chicago area, and I don't know about yours, is closer to 500 to 1. So that makes it impossible for them to effectively reach all the students with some college help.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first problem. The second problem is, these counselors are good on the academic side, but they don't know anything about financial strategy. They know about financial aid. They know how much they can get on a Stafford loan, and they can even estimate, tell them about government aid they might be eligible for. Not familiar with the financial strategies, and that's kind of where we come in and why some high schools are even starting to work with us, because they see we fill that, you know, that important niche.
If you had, and we don't have unlimited amount of time here, but I'm curious, are there are there, in your mind, is there a particular strategy that it's a must that is rarely used?
Well, let me, maybe the best way to handle this is to review some of the basic mistakes that I think families make in preparing and saving for college. One of the biggest we always mention is student savings accounts. You know, sometimes the student piles up, I've seen $20,000, $30,000 and more in a student savings account as a result of gifts from family and grandparents. And it goes in the child's name. So to determine the cost of college or the expected family contribution, which is called EFC, it's a common acronym. To determine EFC, student savings accounts are assessed at 20%. Parent savings are assessed at 5%. So you see the big difference there? If a child had $30,000 in savings, fills out the FAFSA, reports that, they've raised the cost of college by $6,000 a year, potentially, if that money's sitting reported on the FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of an error. Another error is having grandparents send money to the college. You know, grandma wants to help. This is probably the second biggest reason. Grandma sends money. She says, I'll send $15,000 to the college every year. You guys pay the rest. Well, how the college looks at grandma's money, they treat it as student income. Student income is assessed at determining the EFC at 50%. So these are horrible mistakes that parents don't just are uninformed. Just to give you those two examples.
Yeah, I know that I used to tell people when I was in practice working with people that had children, and now we're talking great-grandchildren, yep, grandchildren or great-grandchildren in my practice. Mm-hmm. But the idea, one of the things that was always to me the most ludicrous decision that parents would make, mm-hmm, would be to set up a Uniform Gift to Minors Act account.
You are so right.
And
up there with the top five mistakes, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my personal problem with the Uniform Gift to Minors Act, mm-hmm, is that in the years preparing for college, mm-hmm, there could be in some cases a considerable sum of money.
Yep.
And when that child reached the age of 18 in many states or 21 in others, they could have access to 100% of the money.
Well, that's true also.
And one have one hell of a party, or take yeah, one trip for around the world or whatever. So it, the problem I always had with it is it put too much control in the minor's hands.
Yeah, let me add that, the problem with the Uniform Gifts to Minor Act. That money is legally belonging to the child, and you can't just simply move it to the parent's bank account to avoid the 20% assessment that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
That takes some effort, and a specialist has to do that. So you're right also in your point is very well taken. That money can be abused, and also it's hard to move out of assessment.
Right. How do you feel about 529 plans?
Well, I'll tell you, 529 plans are good if the child is going, now I don't mean to get too complicated here, but if the child is going to a school that uses the federal methodology, that's mm-hmm, a most common methodology for determining EFC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The elite schools, however, Don, use what's called the institutional methodology to determine EFC. And they often count distributions from a 529 as student income. And that's a heavy assessment again, 50% assessment.
Right.
Can be a problem with some schools. Overall, it's not a problem. Overall, it remains a good strategy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are other downsides maybe. That is assessed. You don't get it out of assessment. There might be other ways to save besides 529s. that give you the same benefit without the assessment, but it's not a bad strategy, except for that one big red flag.
So before we go any further, Don, how much more time do I have?
Well, keep going, Dan. You got 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
So Jack, let me tell you about an interesting strategy that can work in certain situations.
Love to hear it.
We have 529 plans that we talked about. We talked about college savings accounts. But we haven't talked about 401k loans.
Oh. Well, let's talk about it. What's your view on that as a way to pay for
college? If the critical piece here is whether or not the child is going to be able to complete the education within a specified period of time, which is the time required under 401k that the loan has to be paid off or it creates taxable income.
That's right, or it becomes a distribution in effect.
Right, right. But I found that in some cases, highly compensated people that have rather large 401ks could use a portion of their 401k with the commitment of the child, if at all possible, to complete the education within the terms of the loan provisions of the 401k.
Yeah. So, well, I interrupted you through, Don. I want to amplify your point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The downside, you know, for the typical American family, we're dealing with a lot of middle-income families, not high-net-worth families,
mm-hmm.
with a large 401k. We're dealing with families where the worst thing they can do is borrow from their own future, their own retirement, to help
mm-hmm.
pay for it. So we're usually against going to 401ks. And
mm-hmm.
those families who think of going that way because of the advantages you mentioned often get in trouble. They don't pay that back in the required.
Right. That's the key. If they don't pay it back within the term, they're in
right.
trouble.
And they're depleting their own future, you know, their future retirement to help the kids. And we never like to go there. We really like to avoid it for that reason. So it could be a strategy, Don, you're right, for some families.
Right. The other strategy that I've always had a difficulty with,
mm-hmm.
and I understand that there are probably a lot of people, this is the only way their child is going to be able to have a chance to go to college. That is where parents take home equity loans to pay
mm-hmm.
for college.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it can be appropriate. If you've got a low interest rate, there's tax deductibility. It's a heck of a lot better, Don, than taking the Parent Plus loan that the colleges offer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know, that's a very
high. My concern is that as much as you were talking about using the 401k or your IRA to take a loan to pay for college, you're mortgaging your future. The same thing is true if you're using the money by taking a loan against your house in a home equity to take out your equity to pay for your children's college. You are mortgaging your future.
I mean, you know, Don, I'm sure you agree. Every family is a little different. Every family is unique, and one strategy for one family might not work for another family.
Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating, and I hate to interrupt it, but we have to interrupt this for a word from our sponsor, but we'll be right back.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
We're back here again with Jack Schaff. This is a fascinating conversation. I'm going to break in here for just one question, Dan.
Go ahead. Do what
then I'm going to turn it back to you because I found it fascinating, even though I have no children, didn't have any. But, you know, it's ironic what you said at the beginning of the program about college counselors. But many years ago, when I was graduating high school, I was accepted to Princeton. But my guidance counselor, whose name I won't mention, though I still remember it, didn't bother to tell me that Princeton assured, if they accepted you, assured you that they would find a way for you to pay. So as a result, I took a scholarship from Georgia Tech instead. But would you want to comment on how families should find out as much as they can from counselors and other sources, and where they can find other sources?
Well, I'll tell you, families should probably, there's a great book that we, I think, the, you know, there's so much literature out there that's bad, that really puts families in a whole wrong direction. But I think on the financial side, the best book out there is probably Paying for College Without Going Broke by Kalman Cheney. That's a Bible. You know, that's just a great book to read. But families have to have a little financial savvy to get through that book. A website, the best website with authoritative information that you know is true and you can count as accurate, is called FinAid.org. F-I-N, as in Nancy, aid.org. That's everything anyone would ever want to know about financial strategies is in that website.
So, Jack, let me ask you a question. We're speaking with Jack Sata, the founder of My Planning College Planning Team, and his website is mycollegeplanningteam.com. This is a little, might be a little uncomfortable, but it's something that needs to be said. Mm-hmm. In the typical clientele that you're working with, what percentage of the parents are college educated themselves?
In our case, now we may not represent a cross section of America here. In our case, I would say about 75%, maybe even 80%. Of the moms and dads that come in to see us have also been through college. They're pretty serious. If they want to come to one of our workshops, they're planners. They're pretty sharp people that we get, and they don't want to miss all the angles. So I would say that's not representative, though, because our families tend to be the higher end of middle income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe 80,000 to 200,000.
Okay.
That just happens to be our market.
Okay. So let me follow this with another question.
Mm-hmm.
Having served as chairman of the board of a private all-boys high school, an opportunity to meet with people from other boards in other schools, in my tenure on the board, which was, I wasn't chairman 17 years, but I was on the board for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in some schools, perhaps more exclusive than inclusive schools, many times the college counselors manipulate where the student applies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have certain relationships with certain colleges and universities throughout the country, and they feel there's an obligation that they need to provide a certain number of candidates. Is that true in the Midwest, or is that an Eastern?
Well, that's considered pretty unethical. We work with academic planners too. You know, our team doesn't include just financial experts in college planning, but people that help with college selection and finding the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that profession, it's highly unethical, and they can lose their certification for favoring colleges because of those, connections.
Mm-hmm.
So whether this goes on in the private school world, I'm not sure. I don't know that world like you do. But we would consider that a pretty highly unethical, practice.
The other thing is,
that is always been fascinating to me is that we have a society that preaches, virtually preaches, in order to succeed in this world today, you have to get a college degree. And yet the dropout rate of students who do not complete even in 5.9 years is extraordinarily high. They come out with some form of student debt that they have to pay off and no degree. Yet I read recently where a licensed auto mechanic for a major manufacturer in a relatively short period of time can be earning six figures a year. And so that we have people in the trades who are making a very good living. We have a continuing decline in the number of people in the trades, yet we have college students who are unemployed or the, their degree is not an employable skill. And yet they've spent $60,000 to $80,000 or more to get that particular degree. So what about, you know, I remember when my youngest son was getting ready to go to Providence College, and you could tell, we could tell in his demeanor and his emotional state, he was involved with a young girl, and, you know, the hormones are going crazy. And I said to my son, you know, you don't have to go now. You don't have to go now. But the pressure on him from his friends and at school and everything else is, I got to do this. Now, it turned out well, and he had a great time in college. He said it was the best time he's ever had in his life. He was going to miss it. But not everybody who got, walks in those ivy-covered doors should ever walk in front of those doors.
You couldn't be more correct. I see that all the time. Well, not all the time, but I see it often. And I, however, am not in a position to tell a parent, even though it's so obvious, that their child is not the best candidate for college. But I'll tell you, everybody's got their heart set on it. My job is to help them in every way I can, but I couldn't agree with you more, Don.
Dan, let me interrupt because we're getting close to the end of the time. Jack, what are the three things that you ask a family at the start of your relationship with them?
Well, what do I ask them? Oh, my gosh, I don't know where to go with that question. I don't know if I can put it in three things. I mean, I start, everybody's got different concerns. I take a full hour with families, and I probe as much as I can. But I want to know what they're trying to accomplish when they come in and seek our advice. You know, what are their problems? What are their questions? They're all over the map. I'm a listener. What I try to do is tune into that parent and listen the best I can as to what their goals are, their child's goals, and also I have to put that in the context of their retirement. You know, we're not here to borrow our retirement money or use our retirement money to pay for college. So I try to look, or we, my team and I, try to look at that whole financial picture, or families are getting into trouble. And then based on our interview, you see, with them, we're going to find strategies based on the interview with each particular family. And I don't know what those are going to be until I hear from them and gather all their financial data.
But Ben, you get to ask the last question.
Thank you. You know, I have to ask this question.
Sure.
How much does the student have in the input process versus the parents?
Well, I think the students have too much input sometimes.
Let me tell you a quick story. I know we're running out of time. Let me tell you a quick story. I'm not going to say which son.
Yeah.
One son said to me, we set down a rule that said the college you go to has to be an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes from home. So we can get there if we have to, and you can get home if you have to. easily. Number two, we expect you to go and do your best. Mm-hmm. And if you do your best and you fail, then you fail. And we'll try and figure out another strategy for you. But I'm wondering how many people, since you said, and I think your number was about 75 to 80% mm-hmm. of the parents of the children that you're working with are previous college graduates.
Yes.
I wonder how much pressure is put on by the parents that you have to go to college. And do parents ever say to that child, you don't have to do that? There are other things you can do.
Well, yes, the pressure, I've seen that, of course. There's that expectation from parents. They're kind of forcing this choice on the child. That happens also.
Mm-hmm.
See too many parents on the other side of the coin, Don. They're catering to their kid's whim. You know, they want to go to that, the kid wants to go to that great party school where his girlfriend's going.
Right.
That. Or, you know, and the parents give in to these strategies of the child in college selection who has something else completely on his mind rather than finding truly the right fit.
Right.
The right fit financially, the right fit academically. You know, there's so many things to consider in college selection. And
right.
they're catering to their child and letting the child lead that process.
Let me give you a personal example. I had one of my sons say to me, Dad, it's your job to pay for the school that I want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, it doesn't work that way. There's only so much money I can afford to pay.
Yep.
And if you can't find a school at that price, sorry.
That's right.
So you're right. You can have situations where the child tries to take control.
Yeah, that's right.
But if the parents don't stand up and say, these are the rules, then the parents are in serious trouble. And I think we're out of time. Are we done?
You and I are on the same page. Are you sure you've never been in my business?
Well, when you're trying to counsel four boys, somewhat.
Jack, tell people how they can reach you and your company, and you've got to come back and talk some more sometime soon.
I don't want to get too popular over there now. they can reach me. I'll give you my phone number, 630-470-6880. That's my that's our company phone line, and they can email me at jack@mycollegeplanningteam.com.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's been illuminating, and it makes me glad. Almost glad that I didn't have to worry about some of these problems. So thank
yeah.
you so much
okay,
for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Bye.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Do you audition new hires, especially for social media and other creative skilled jobs? Actors audition for parts in plays, TV shows, movies, even commercials. If you're going to expand your social media footprint and you're thinking about hiring your own social media manager, then why not audition the applicant for the job? People can speak the lingo, but can they walk the walk? You have a right to see what they can do. When a graphic artist applies for a job, they bring in a portfolio of their work. So when you're auditioning your social media person, have them make a presentation of their success. So here's your recalculating.biz tip of the day. Have the potential candidates for a social media job go to your website and have them make a presentation to you what they would change about your site and what the changes would do in terms of new customers and sales. A picture can be worth 1,000 words. This is Dan Perkins with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Dan, we only have time to say goodbye for today.
Well, it was a great show, and we had some terrific guests, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it and also got some good ideas of some of the challenges of starting your own small business. So this is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, If you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.